For a number of years, Benjamin Franklin served as the first United States ambassador to France. And I read about this one time when he was in Paris, and he decided to attend the Infidels Club, which was this group of philosophers who generally spurned religion. And they spent most of their time searching for and discussing masterpieces of literature and art. Well, Franklin, he said that he had discovered this ancient manuscript that he thought was worthy of their consideration. He then read to them the book of Ruth, but he changed the names of the people and the places. Well, when he was done, they were unanimous in their praise. And they were just going on and on, and they asked him where it came from. And as you can imagine, to Franklin's delight, he announced that it came from the Bible. All right, and so if you haven't already, let's be turning back to the book of Ruth. Today we're going to finish our mini-series on this little book, one of the two books in the Bible named after a woman. And before we begin, we need some background to get everyone back up to speed. Click here to skip the recap. No, you don't get to do that. Okay, some little kids are like... As I mentioned last week, at the Feast of Harvest, also known as the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost, the Jews would read the book of Ruth, and that seems to have been done because a lot of the story is set in the harvest fields. And this book, it's a Hebrew short story named after its main character, Ruth, a woman from Moab, who became the great-grandmother of King David. And it's considered by many to be one of the most beautiful short stories ever written. There are no laws, no miracles, no wars, no fistfights. It's just the domestic affairs of one particular family. And this book, it shows an old widow's transformation from despair and emptiness to happiness and fulfillment through the acts of her daughter-in-law, Ruth. And the name Ruth, it sounds like the Hebrew word for friendship. And as we can see, she definitely proved to be a great friend to her mother-in-law, Naomi. Well, as the book tells us, these things happened in the time of the judges, which, if you remember, was a period of religious and moral decline, national disunity and foreign oppression, immorality, idolatry and wars, both internal and external, and those things were just common. As Judges 21:25 says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." And that's why it's often said that Ruth brightened the dark ages of Israel's history. This story, it's like a breath of fresh air in the midst of all that. Well, we can see that redemption is an important word in Ruth, meaning to buy back. Although it's not always translated as that, the Hebrew word is found, I believe, 23 times in this little book in its various forms. And while the book doesn't record the purpose for writing it, I believe that it definitely illustrates some valuable truths, even for Christians, even for 21st century American Christians living in Missouri, sitting in a church building in Rolla, listening to a skinny white preacher. Now, in chapter 1, we read about the family of Elimelech. And some people like to point out that this family had problems from three areas. Problems from cultural sources, living during the time of the judges. Problems from natural forces, the famine and having sickly children. And problems from personal choices, moving out of the promised land. And our difficulties in life, they often stem from these as well. Now you may ask, how do we know that they had sickly children? Well, we get that from the names that they gave their sons. Mahlon means sickly, and Chilion means pining or wasting away. And maybe that had something to do with their untimely deaths. Again, I'm so glad that we don't name our kids that way today, because my name would have been Skinny Legs or something like that. Well, in the end of chapter 1, we can see that Naomi and Ruth, they settled in Bethlehem. And so Naomi was an old widow who had lost not only her husband, but her two sons. And she was telling people to call her Mara, which means bitter, instead of Naomi, which means pleasant or lovely. And Ruth, well, she was a young widow and a Moabitess now living in a strange land. Unlike Orpah, she had decided to go with her mother-in-law. And in this chapter, we're reminded of the importance of the choices that we make and the impact that they can have on our lives. We saw Elimelech's choice to move his family to Moab outside of the promised land, and we saw Ruth's choice to move with her mother-in-law to Bethlehem. And sometimes the choices that we make, they're not necessarily between right and wrong, but between good and better. And we just need to be careful. And of course, we need to be sure to make our choices with Matthew 6:33 in mind, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Well, in chapter 2, we see these two examples of righteous character, because we saw Ruth's humility and her willingness to do whatever it took to take care of her mother-in-law. And then we saw Boaz's respectful treatment of his workers and his kindness toward Ruth, a poor foreign woman in his field. Well, also in chapter 2, we're introduced to the concept of a kinsman redeemer, a very important role in the Old Testament. You see, a kinsman redeemer would protect the interests of the needy members of the extended family. And they would do things like redeem land that a poor relative had sold outside the family, redeem a relative who had been sold into slavery, avenge the killing of a relative, and marry a childless widow to raise up children in her dead husband's name. Now, with that in mind, let's move on to the next chapter. So chapter 3, Ruth appeals to Boaz. And let's start with verses 1 through 6. Again, I'll be reading from the NIV, because I think it does a good job with the book of Ruth. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you, where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Perhaps Naomi had interpreted his kindness toward Ruth as interest in her. And maybe she had heard something in Ruth's voice when talking about him. But some people would not be too happy with their mother-in-law trying to arrange a marriage for them, playing matchmaker. But, you know, Ruth, again, she listened to her advice. So she did some exfoliating. She fixed her hair. She went from one eyebrow to two. Maybe she had time to get the teeth whitening treatment and a manicure and a pedicure. They had sandals. And anyway, in other words, they had Extreme Makeover Israelite edition. Well, a threshing floor, it was often this circle of rock or hard-packed ground, about 50 to 100 feet across, where grain could be threshed and winnowed to separate it from the chaff. And here's a picture of a smaller one. And I assumed that he'd be sleeping by the grain that night to protect it from thieves. And, okay, to our single ladies, Boaz, he had these two really good qualities that you should be looking for in a guy. He loves the Lord, and he has a job. And there are other things to consider, but those two need to be at the top. He loves the Lord, and he's got a job. Okay, now, this may be a funny cultural thing to us, which he's asking Ruth to go ahead and do. But every culture has its odd practices. Just ask Kwame and Mehta, all right? There are plenty of things that we do that other cultures, they just scratch their heads. And I don't believe anything indecent or immoral was going on here. It was involved in this one. At least it wasn't between Ruth and Boaz. I mean, I know some of you were raising your eyebrows, or eyebrow in the case of those with a unibrow. No judgment. Oh, that was bad. Okay, verse 7. Let's move on here. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. As the kids used to say, she's got some mad ninja skills. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character." And that's the same language that's used for the Proverbs 31 woman. "Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as sure as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning. So no immorality went on. "But got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, 'Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor.' He also said, 'Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out.' When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town." Some manuscripts say then she went back to town. And so this is kind of like a Sadie Hawkins thing. How many of you remember the Sadie Hawkins dances where the girls had to ask the guys? Okay, well, the statement, "Spread the corner of your garment over me since you're a kinsman redeemer," it seems to be a request for marriage. And I think that it symbolized protection and security. We find it mentioned in Ezekiel 16:8. And I've read that even modern Jews will sometimes incorporate this into their ceremonies, into the wedding ceremonies. The groom will put a cloak around his bride to symbolize this. Okay, so what did he mean by "this kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier"? Well, her first kindness was to stay with Naomi to take care of her. This kindness was her willingness to marry Boaz. See, she chose Boaz over a younger man in order to provide Naomi with a legal heir for one of her deceased sons. And Boaz seemed to be pretty happy about this as well. I mean, at least that's the impression I get. And notice how he mentioned her noble character. Not that she's got great hair, nails, and eyebrows. It's nice to look good on the outside, but it's much more important to look good on the inside. As we can see, though, the priority went to the nearest relative. In other words, someone who was closer on the family tree. And Boaz, he was a man who he would not bypass the directives of the law. Well, also, I like how he wanted to protect her from gossip. He said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." We can see from Hosea 9:1 that prostitutes sometimes tried to take their business to threshing floors, at least in Hosea's time. So that's not what happened here, and Boaz didn't want anyone thinking that. Have you noticed that people often jump to conclusions? They often assume the worst, and then they share it on social media. Well, let's go on. Verse 16. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens. For the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." And so that present, the 6 measures of barley, that assured Naomi that he was really willing to do so. Well, there was nothing for Ruth to do now, but the hard part, wait. So in this chapter, we see the integrity of Boaz, wanting to keep the law, as well as his thoughtfulness, trying to protect her from gossip, and his generous gifts. So Two more really good qualities. All right, chapter 4, Ruth marries Boaz. Verse 1. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here." And they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the kinsman redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." We see that the town gate, it kind of served as the town hall in ancient Israel. It is a normal place for business, for legal transactions. I assume because you've got witnesses, they're readily available. And, well, 10 elders, that might have been the customary full court for legal proceedings during that time. Now, I've read that this could be translated as the land had already been sold. You know, in her destitute state, she may have already sold it, or she was ready to sell it. But some think that it actually might have already been sold by her and Elimelech before they moved to Moab. As I mentioned, you know, one of the jobs of the kinsman redeemer was to redeem land that a poor relative had sold outside the family or was going to sell. It was very important to the Israelites that land stay within the family. Now, what he meant by, "then I cannot redeem it because it might endanger my own estate," that's hard to determine. But he liked the idea until he found out that it involved the responsibility of marrying and supporting Ruth as well. Maybe Boaz really put the stress on her being from Moab. But you see, the kinsman redeemer, he must not only be a relative, but he must also be willing. Now see, personally, I think Boaz was pretty savvy in the way he presented this. I mean, you know he wanted Ruth for his wife, a young bride with a good work ethic and a kind spirit and a foreign accent. "It sounds just like my wife when we first met." Yes, sir. All right, verse 7. "Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, 'Buy it yourself,' and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, 'Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses.' Then the elders and all those at the gate said, 'We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah.'" Now, the giving of the sandal, you know, that might have represented the right of the receiver to walk on and till the land redeemed. And with the explanation here, it had obviously gone out of use by the time of writing this book. I mean, the readers needed an explanation. Okay, what we find is that it was indeed okay for Boaz to marry her, a Gentile, since she had fully embraced the true religion. And for our teens and those who are not yet married, I've got to say it. Nationality or color does not matter. The amount of melanin in their skin, the slant of their eyes, or the accent on their tongue is nothing. What matters is their relationship with God. My advice, my suggestion to you is that you only date strong Christians because you marry whom you date, or court, for those who don't like the D word. Well, you'll notice that they mentioned Rachel and Leah and the family of Perez. Well, Rachel and Leah, they were the wives of Jacob. The tribes of Israel came from Jacob's children. And the family of Perez, his descendants, had raised the tribe of Judah to a prominent place in Israel. All right, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. Now again, that's an Americanized pronunciation of those names. You notice here in verse 13 how it says the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Children are to be seen as a gift from God. And since that is true, there's a stewardship involved. How are we raising them? So Naomi got to have an heir. Obed means the serving one. He would serve Naomi by continuing the family name, and grandchildren just seem to make people happy. So again, this book, it shows the transformation. It shows her transformation from despair and emptiness to fulfillment and happiness through the acts of Ruth. As they said to Naomi, Ruth proved to be better to her than seven sons. And here we find the genealogy of David that just so happens to be the genealogy of the Messiah, who was placed in that manger about 1,000 years after the time of David. And so Ruth, a young widow from a heathen land, not only found a place among the people of God, but a place in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. I think there's something that we can get from this. Your future is much more important than your past. An undesirable background. That doesn't mean that we can't have a wonderful and fruitful future. And so much of it depends on the choices we make. Well, this book is filled with contrasts. There's Ruth and Orpah, Boaz and the unnamed kinsman, Naomi at the beginning and Naomi at the end. Mara back to Naomi. All right, so what can we learn from this book of David's righteous ancestors? Well, it shows that God accepts people from all nations. The Messiah descended from at least three Gentile mothers, Tamar, Rahab, and Ruth. Everyone, regardless of nationality, who put their obedient faith in God will be acceptable to him. It shows us the importance of virtues like loyalty, kindness, humility, and integrity. And I think it shows us the truth of Romans 8:28, for we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love him, to those who are called according to his purpose. God He cares about ordinary people and families, not just about whole nations. And, well, as a bonus, it illustrates the functions of the Hebrew kinsman redeemer. That seems to be a type, it seems to be a symbol of Christ, our redeemer. Again, the New Testament talks a lot about redemption. We find verses like Galatians 4:4-5. But when the fullness of the time came, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, in order that he might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. And Titus 2:13-14. Looking for the blessed hope and the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior Christ Jesus, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself a people for his own possession. We were so important to Jesus that he was willing to pay the ultimate price to redeem us. Ruth is a good book. Let's remember that such character, like that of Ruth and Boaz, was manifested during a dark period in Israel's history. As I mentioned last week, some people believe that we may be coming on a dark period of America's history. And if that's true, will you and I still be the salt of the earth and the light of the world? Matthew 5:13-16. So my conclusion, we need more Ruths in the world.